Yeah. And hit records on my demo. Did y'all boys not get the memo? I do not stay at the Intercontinental. And anything I got is not a rental.
And welcome back to the Greg Horrendous Show, where we have the newest edition of the Fairleigh Dickinson University basketball program. I welcome Maurice Joseph to the Greg Horrendous Show. Mo, what up?
Thanks for having me, Coach. This is awesome.
I'll tell you one thing. You got a radio voice too, Kenny.
Sign him up.
That's good.
The Mojo Show.
The Mojo is in the house.
I'll take it.
Amen. For our fans and our listeners and our team of listeners, Maurice Joseph is now an assistant basketball coach. You should know this by now, but Mo, when did you come on board officially?
Officially mid-August.
Mid-August, yeah, late addition. And I tell you one thing, and I've said this publicly, that hiring you and signing you, and I told my athletic director, Brad Hurlbut, that it was like signing a player. Obviously, Mo, you were a great player. You're a great assistant coach. You were a head coach at George Washington University, and it's a huge addition to our program. And I know I've told you this personally, but publicly, I need to say it again, and I think it's exciting. How do you like your first – seems like you've been here a lot longer than two, right?
am I wearing out my welcome already?
It's September 18th as we tape, and you started and all. Yeah, you. But no, it just seems like you're part of the. You fit, man. You fit, and with our program, you either fit or you don't. And
right.
I feel the fit. How do you feel?
It's been great. You know, like I said from day one, what you've been able to do here, I have a great deal of respect for it, and turning a program around, and then. The guys that are in this program make it special, and you said that from day one, and now in the first month had an opportunity to interact with the guys, unbelievable kids, and that makes the job fun, and I'm a guy that can kind of chameleon my way through some things, and our guys are tremendous, from Jaleel to Elijah, all our guys are great, so it's been fun. I have a lot of fun.
What's the number one thing? Like, you know, obviously you've played, we've had Tom Izzo, for everyone out there, you know, Mojo went to Michigan State, transferred to Vermont, coached at GW, was a national success story in Montreal. So you've been around the block. You played professional basketball. What's the biggest thing? Let's toot our own horn, but I want you to be as real as you can be. What jumps out about our program after being here for a month and a half or 2 months in regards to what we do maybe a little differently or what we do best here at Fairleigh Dickinson Basketball?
Well, the first thing that I realized was the level of character that the guys have from top to bottom.
Yep.
It hasn't been a single guy that has missed a study hall or missed a class.
I know.
And, you know, typically, you know, the first couple of weeks in school, you're going to have a couple of hiccups here or there. But we've had no knock on wood. We've had no issues. And those things translate to the court. And you could tell we have disciplined kids of high character, kids who really love playing for each other, not just with each other. So that's very, very evident. And I think once you do that, and obviously you have to have talent and all those other things, but when you have people with character breeds sustainable success. And,
amen.
And we certainly have that in our program.
What about our talent level? Are you surprised or kind of like, are we, and I know I'm asking you questions that I want to hear the right answers, but people all understand that you have character and you've been places. So you're going to give me the truth, and that's what we're asking for. Tell me about our talent level. Are you surprised, or are we better? How's our talent level compared to, like, say, an Atlantic 10 program? You just came from GW.
Well, here's what I've noticed, and I think I have a pretty good spectrum because I played at Michigan State, which is the highest level, and played at a really good program at the University of Vermont, but a very different league, the America East, from the Big Ten.
Right.
And then I coached at GW for 8 years, so I think I've kind of had, you know, the low major, so to speak, mid major and high major, so I had a pretty good spectrum. And one thing that I've come across, that guards at all levels are talented. You know what I mean? Like the good guards are good guards. They might be a little shorter. They might not. Their wingspan might be a little shorter at the lower levels. They might not have all the tools, but being able to think the game and have the speed and the change of direction and all, being able to play in ball screens, all those things are pretty consistent.
Right.
So the our talent in the backcourt is as good as I've seen. It could be in the A-10 backcourts, Colonial, American.
Right.
We have some talent in our program. You know, what you see across the board for the most part when you drop down levels, so to speak, is big guys are
size.
Yep. Size. You know, there's probably more undersized guys in this league, and the guys who do have size aren't as polished. You know,
right.
They're not 6'10" and stepping out and jumping out of the gym. So our talent level is high, and there's a reason,
so you,
the reason
so
why
you're
we're
down
coming
on
off
Elijah and Caleb. You're taking it right away. Could those guys play at a higher level, do you think?
I think so.
Because I think they're like have comparable size, athleticism, skill. What's the difference? What do those two guys need to do specifically? And then you can go to, you know, our incoming guys, our Danny Rodriguez, Colin McManus, and Mark Dattica. But the first, the starting two, like that twin head that we have at the 4 or 5 spot. Tell me about those guys specifically.
Well, Caleb is incredibly versatile in his ability on both ends of the floor.
Yeah,
he's shown an ability to sit down and contain guys in the perimeter, and he has shown an ability to bang with some of our big boys.
Yep.
Around the basket, and from what I understand, obviously wasn't here last year or previous years, but his perimeter game, ball handling and shooting has improved.
Absolutely,
he's been shooting the ball in the month that I've been here. He shot the ball really well. So he's a guy that has versatility on both ends of the floor, and I've been really impressed with that because that gives him the options to be able to play small or play big or do different things.
Yep.
And he gives you that luxury, which not a lot of guys do. You know, so we're fortunate to have him.
Elijah.
And Elijah is of the same mold but a little different. He's more of a tweener.
Right.
You know, he's more of a tweener where he has the size and to be more of a low post presence, maybe not as polished from the perimeter, but capable, and maybe not as versatile defensively, but has the heart to do so. You know, so he's a great mix of passion, toughness, skill, and versatility. He's kind of more of a smorgasbord in that respect.
I like that smorgasbord, Kenny. That's
Caleb.
A further. We have to have a bell, like when people use certain words
for
and
the
I'm
first
excited,
time.
Like we got a ding, 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 ding. Smorgasbord.
Your brother's at the top of the list.
No,
and
my
Mojo's
brother's
at number
yeah,
two.
No, Mojo right now gets in. He's in the top three right now. Mojo, let's stop talking about Fairleigh because this show is not about Fairleigh Dickinson basketball.
Okay.
This show is about the guests that we have, and not only just what you're doing now, but where you came from. And your story is an incredible story. You were born in Quebec, in Montreal.
Montreal, Quebec, yep.
And we want to know the genesis of, like, I want to know what kind of, at 5 years old, what were you, like, did you have a hockey puck in your room, or basketball?
Never.
Baseball bat? What were you doing at five? From 5 to 10, tell me about Mojo.
Contrary to popular belief, not every single Canadian plays hockey and has a hockey puck in their crib.
Okay,
believe me, it is prevalent, but I was an anomaly from the sense that I was balling up.
Anomaly! Ding, 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 ding. That's two. Now he's showing off, Kenny.
Yeah, now I'm showing
off. I'm sorry.
Right? But I was balling up socks and dunking in the hamper.
So you could have been from the Bronx or Brooklyn or Chicago.
Yeah,
you were like
I was a junkie from before I could remember.
Tell Kenny because he didn't ever tell our audience about the socks because we haven't spoken about this ever. But I know exactly. Tell everybody what you would do, and I want to hear if I did the same. I think we did the same exact thing. Tell them about the socks.
So my brother and I, Chris Joseph, my brother, we were not too far in age, 3 years apart. So you know, 5, 6, 7 years old, we would take maybe 2-3 sets of socks and kind of roll it up into like kind of overlap them so you have like almost like a
basketball, mini ball,
maybe like a grapefruit size or like a that size ball, and you either take some books and put the hamper on top of it so the hamper has a little bit of height. Obviously the hamper's at this point probably 4 feet tall.
You open the hamper
open the hamper up and you play 1-on-1 and you do the Reggie Miller 3-2-1 countdown or the Michael Jordan All that kind of stuff, the game winners and the fadeaways and falling on the ground, free throw to win a national championship.
Now, was the hamper in where your mother did the cleaning and all that? Where was the hamper? In the bedroom? Where was the hamper?
We would take it from the bedroom and put it against the front door So people will be coming home and opening the door.
That's another
fall
level.
Over.
Yeah.
Yes. Because
my mother used to put us in like distant rooms from people so that we went. But I like that. So
yeah.
Because we had a
small apartment growing up. So we
gotcha.
the spot that we could put it at was
gotcha.
Right there on the front door. And we would just play one on one. We'd dream about being in an NBA championship and all that kind of stuff.
Which your brother played in the NBA.
He did. Yes. Yes. Drafted by the Celtics late second round in 2012.
Yeah. So that dream, and you went to Michigan State, like, where's the talent come from? Mom, dad, where? Like, I'm a big believer in genes. So somewhere there's talent, there's character, there's a lot of good things. Where does your guy's talent come from, and where does your character come from? Tell me what's inside. What makes you tick, man?
I think character certainly comes from our mom.
Yep.
You know, she is not the warm and fuzzy type. She is
okay.
Toughness personified.
Yes, I can see that.
Not a great deal of hugs and I love yous and honey and all that kind of stuff. It was tough love growing up.
Okay.
And that was pretty consistent. So we were disciplined from an early age. In terms of talent, neither of my parents were athletes. My grandmother was 6'3".
Well, there you go.
My grandmother was 6'3". So
Your grandmother was sick. That's cool.
Yeah, so we have a tall family. My sister is 6 feet, maybe 6'1".
How tall are you, legit?
I'm 6'4".
6'4".
My brother is 6'7".
Yeah.
And then my other sister is about 5'8", 5'9".
You got a big family.
So
we go from 5 to 10. Now, when is the moment when you say to yourself or somebody says to you, yo, man, you're for real. You could play at the highest level. You got a shot. When did you either realize that or when you were told that by someone else?
Well, the first time I got, you know, figuratively punched in the mouth is when I took a trip. I was 14 playing for Sun Youth. It's a
Sun Youth
organization
in
Montreal. So we took a trip to the U.S. I believe it was to Albany. That was my first time. I was about 13 or 14, 14 years old. First time playing against American players. And I always try to set my bar to be the Americans, right? Because I thought I'd need to compare myself to the best, and came down here and I got my butt handed to me, left and right. It wasn't tough enough, didn't shoot it well enough. Guys seemed bigger, stronger, smarter, and faster. So I went back, and that's when I became obsessed about getting better.
Right.
And I went from a guy who loved basketball to a guy that lived basketball.
I
started working out at the parks two, three times a day,
right,
trying to get a certain amount, 2,000, 3,000 shots a day, and I did that pretty consistently as a teen after getting my butt kicked. And then the next summer, we took that same trip, and I did pretty well, and that's when I started to believe that I belong.
Who was your first phone call that you accepted recruiting-wise? Was it Michigan State or was
it? Oh, no.
What kind of schools were on you?
My first offer ever was from Siena. I remember Rob Jackson, the assistant.
Oh, sure. Rob Jackson. Good man. Then he went to the Spurs.
He's been with the Spurs as a scout for a long
time. Is he still with the Spurs?
I believe so, yeah, because he was
very quiet guy.
Yeah, quiet.
No.
Very smart.
Little glasses. Yeah. Oh, so he picked it out.
Yeah, so
Siena, then who after Siena?
Oh, gosh.
Then everybody came?
UMass came pretty early. So Pat Sellers, who I know worked for you, was on this show. He worked for Steve Lapis, who was obviously the dad of Pete
Kenny,
Lapis.
What about the circle of life here?
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. So
nuts.
So Pat Sellers saw me in wherever he saw me, then started recruiting me. And I visited UMass when Steve Lapis was the coach back then. And so Pat, I think UMass was the second school.
That's nuts.
Yeah. So Pat Sellers, I've known Pat Sellers now for probably, 16, 17 years now.
Now, Michigan State is obviously different than all of those schools.
Yeah.
When was the moment, they start recruiting pretty early? Did they get in late with you? And how did that process go down? And what assistant coach recruited you from the Spartans?
So that was the summer of my junior year.
Okay.
I got invited to the old ABCD camp that happened on this campus.
On this campus.
And that was my first time ever visiting FDU when Sonny Vaccaro was running the ABCD camp. And I played well there and got some attention there. Left camp early to be able to meet my high school team with John DeAngelis, who you know, to play in the Kentucky Hoop Fest. And Coach Izzo actually followed me from the ABCD camp to Kentucky.
They let you out of ABCD to go with Johnny D?
Yeah, you know Johnny D well.
He ain't playing now.
He's not playing around. So he wanted me with the team. And it was the last day of camp, so I missed the last day and met my team and then played well enough there. And at my first game in the Kentucky Hoop Fest, I remember Coach Izzo being there, Skip Prosser being there, Pete Gillen being there.
Were they at Xavier at the time recruiting you, or where were those guys? Probably Xavier,
It was Wake.
Oh, Wake.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Skip was at Wake, and Pete was at Virginia.
Virginia.
UVA, okay. Yeah, at the time. And Coach Izzo was there, and a few other, Thad Mata was there.
Sure.
And ended up playing really well in the Kentucky Hoop Fest. And then
how many visits did you take?
Oh, gosh. Boston College, UMass, Ohio State, NC State, Michigan State, so five.
Wow, so you took all five visits.
UVA, a couple of them were unofficially at the time.
Right, sure,
UVA.
And then what at the end of the day said, you know what, Michigan State. I know Michigan State, I think, is relatively, you know, Michigan, you can get over to Toronto pretty quick, but it's a distance from Montreal. What was the selling point at the end that Michigan, was it just Iz, or was it just,
It was Coach Izzo's ability to connect.
Right.
You know, when it came down to it, I was a Canadian kid about to leave his country to play Division I basketball.
Was he a father figure type almost, or no?
Not necessarily a father figure type, but when I visited a program, I saw how close-knit the guys were, how tight they were. And, you know, he coached guys tough and held them accountable, but I knew he's a guy that had his players' backs.
What was your biggest game at Michigan State where you just did it? Like, it doesn't – maybe a three at the buzzer or – 10 points to beat a Big Ten team. What was that one moment that you go back at Michigan State when you're just going to sleep at night and say, oh, man, that was nice?
I'll give you three quick moments. So my freshman year, I didn't play a great deal. I was playing behind a guy named Shannon Brown,
who got drafted as a first-round draft pick.
Maurice Ager, first-round draft pick, Cleveland Cavs and Dallas Mavs, respectively. So we had some. I was behind some talent. I knew I wasn't going to come in and set the world on fire right away, so I could learn behind those guys.
Right.
So I only scored 16 points my whole freshman year.
Okay.
The first game, my sophomore year, I spent the summer working out, didn't go home.
Right.
Wanted to, like, you know, prove myself and all that kind of stuff, and had 16 points in my first game my sophomore year.
Cool.
You know, so I thought I improved. So I thought that was like, all right.
That's the jump you needed to make.
So there was that. That was a pretty cool deal. Beating Kevin Durant and Texas
at
Madison Square Garden, that was a huge deal.
Was that a preseason NIT or one of those deals?
Exactly. Maybe Coaches versus Cancer. One of those deals.
Beat them. Oh, that's nice. That's a feather.
And then the last one was beating Wisconsin when they were number one in the country on our court at the Breslin Center. So that was a huge game. And they had Alondo Tucker at the time. He was the Big Ten Player of the Year.
Sure.
So that was a win that I remember, and our fans stormed the court, and it was just mayhem. It was awesome. So some pretty cool moments.
You decide now to transfer.
Right.
Tell me that process. When did that go down? How did it go down? Was it a tough time for you? Was it an easy decision? I know you went through some things with your mom, but explain the transfer process.
Yeah, the big part of it was wanting to get closer to home, feeling like I needed to be there for my family.
Sure.
With, you know, some health issues, some financial issues,
yes,
different things going on.
Right.
And feeling that I was too far made me feel like I was maybe skipping out some responsibilities.
Yep.
At the time, and that's, you know, 19-year-old, 20-year-old me, that's what I'm thinking at the time, you know.
Right.
So, but it was not an easy decision. I loved Michigan State. I loved my teammates. I loved my coaches. Sat down with Coach Izzo, and I'll tell you how great Coach Izzo is. You know, when I told him I wanted to transfer, after that conversation, we talked about it. He said, you know, where would you want to go and all that kind of stuff. It was a mutual kind of an understanding deal. And the following workout was a Monday morning. I'm sorry, Monday afternoon individual workout. You know, they're starting the spring workouts with the guys. And I didn't show up because I felt like I wasn't part of the program anymore.
Sure.
I told him I was transferring. So I felt iffy. Even though I was still their friends.
No, it's an awkward period.
Awkward period, yeah. It's an awkward period. And my phone rings. And
where are you?
I'm in my apartment. It's like, Mojo, where
are you?
Where are you? What do you? Like, why aren't you in the gym? I was like, Coach, I didn't feel right. He's like, no. Wherever you transfer, you're transferring from Michigan State. Wherever you go, they're going to get a player. So you get your butt. He didn't say it so nicely, but yes. You get your butt to the gym, and let's get this work. And the rest of the spring, I was in every
you were in there
every workout. Every, you know, it was
yeah. It happened with us. Stephon Gigotts graduated and was going to grad transfer, and he wound up going to South Florida.
Right, yep.
Same thing happened. I said, hey, yo, man, you're family here until you leave. And that's kind of like some places are not like that.
Correct,
some places, correct. As soon as you talk about transferring, boom, you're locked
you're,
out
you're,
of the
your gears locked, in the, your gears in a trash out. Bag, your nameplate's gone.
Time is flying, Mo. Vermont. You win 49 games in 2 years.
Yeah.
You score the ball. You go to NCAA tournaments. You win games.
Yep.
Give me the Vermont. Like, give me the feel-good story, the end of your collegiate career.
I mean, that's an easy one for me. You know,
okay.
I transferred to Vermont. We win a regular season championship my junior year. Senior year, we win the league. And it worked out perfectly because the higher seed hosts and –
right.
You know, we finished second that year, my senior year, but the number one seed got upset, so we got the championship game on our gym. In our gym
at like 11 o'clock.
Exactly.
The American East, it's like you wake up for breakfast, and it's Vermont, Stony Brook, or whoever.
Exactly.
And the joint is jumping.
Fans are lining outside from some 7 a.m.
Yeah, that's great
stuff. So we win the game. We have Selection Sunday, you know, celebration. We have Selection Sunday, and then we see Vermont, number 16, Vermont pop up against – number one Syracuse, and obviously my brother was playing for Syracuse at the time.
Yes.
So, you know, we just won a championship, and I'm going to the NCAA tournament to play against my little brother. It's something that we dreamt about since rolling up those socks.
You go from the hamper to the dance party
to the NCAA tournament. So that was a huge deal and big deal in Canada.
I did not know that.
Yeah, no,
that's very cool.
Now the game wasn't as fun because we got smoked. They
we
were
got
obviously
rock. That's okay.
They were really talented.
Yes,
and, you know, we gave it all we had. But if I had to end my college career, I'd rather it be from family and my brother.
Amen.
And my brother's team knocked us out. So I still haven't watched that game. I have
right.
it on DVD at home.
I still haven't watched a Prairie View game, and I've got the thumb drive on my desk, and it's when I go to my TV at home where it's, what do you call that, when you DVR it?
Yeah.
It's up there, and I won't click it. And I want to click it, but it's like anything else. I always see the warts when I'm the head. I don't see the good. Like, I don't
fast forward to the second half.
I should do that. I could. But Darnell was great in that first half.
Oh, for sure.
Kenny, did we make a good hire?
Dude, Mojo's the greatest, man.
How much success did he just talk about? Mojo can do this. He can talk about his success without being a braggadocious guy.
No, very humble, great diction.
But he just talked about himself for 20 minutes. How humble can he be?
But you were asking him the questions.
I was feeding him the questions. But I just think, Mo, I can't thank you enough, number one, for coming on the show before we've won any games. Usually these guys go on the way out. But I think it was important today to have our listeners and our fans out there know what they're getting. And we're getting a champion, Kenny. I want to thank you a lot, Mo, for being on. I know we're going to have more success. And the success is coming from the North.
We the North, yeah. Well, no, I appreciate you having me on. And like I said, I'm grateful for the opportunity and looking forward to diving into the trenches with you and the rest of the guys
Amen.
In the program this season.
And we're going to take them out with O Canada.
Oh, I love it. Love it.
Not only for you, but for John DeAngelis.
My man, JD.
One of the great Canadian basketball ambassadors the earth has ever seen. Your brother. We'll have you on again to talk about your brother and all the NBA guys you coach. But for now, man, you just gave us 20-plus minutes of Mojo, and we love it. Mo, thank you so much for being on the Greg Herrenda Show.
Appreciate it, Coach.
You got it, baby. We'll be back after this.
This is Maurice Joseph, assistant coach at FDU. And when I'm not at the Rothman Center working out with Jaleel, X, and the rest of our guys, I'm listening to the Greg Herrenda Show on WFDU.